Professor Ian McCallman from the University of Sydney is author of The Reef, A Passionate History. He claims Lieutenant, later Captain, James Cook and the crew of the Endeavour were this continent's first recorded castaways.
The interesting thing about Cook and the Great Barrier Reef is that you can see Cook in an entirely different light from the way that we generally see him, which is as the great explorer, you know, who brought half a hemisphere into the hands of Britain. He is the first, he and his men are the first castaways of the southern hemisphere. His ship hit a coral reef they didn't know was there. They didn't realize they were in the Great Barrier Reef. They never would. And they had sailed in what we now know as the Barrier Reef Lagoon for 800 kilometers. And then suddenly in the middle of the night, they hit a reef. And the boat looks as though it's going to go down. Cook is absolutely certain they will be confronted with one or two fates. Either that the ship will be smashed to pieces and they will drown, or, he said, worse, we will be marooned and facing what they would likely believe to be very hostile, possibly head-hunting savages.
Instead, Cook and his crew encountered the clan of traditional custodian Alberta Hornsby. Ian McCallman recorded this interview with Alberta while he was working on his book, The Reef. They're sitting on a windy headland overlooking the Endeavour River at what's now Cooktown.
One of the things that I've learned about this area was that it was considered to be a free zone. And it meant that this place was a special place that people from surrounding clan lands would come and meet. It was a place of mediation. It was a place where initiations took place. One of the laws was prohibiting the spilling of blood on this land.
It's incredible to think that, well, Cook lucked out, didn't he? I mean, he really did. He had no idea of any of this.
My uncle Eric always says that if he had landed on that other side, the story may have been different.
Yeah. Nevertheless, there's violence. A dispute erupts over scarce resources, green turtle.
Cook and Banks and his men had every intention of living peacefully with these people. But that was not his first concern. When Cook went ashore, his first concern, of course, was, is the boat repairable? It proves to be repairable. His next concern is, how the hell will we get out of here? Because he goes up a mountain and he sees that he is absolutely surrounded by coral reefs. It's like something he's never seen before. And he and Banks coin the term, the labyrinth. They're in a labyrinth. He does not know how they're going to leave, and he has another problem, because a number of his men have scurvy, and they will die unless they can get fresh vegetables and fresh meat. So that's his first concern, and what he hopes with the locals is that he can trade with them, as you're able to do in the South Pacific. You give them some beads and some gewgaws, as he used to call them, and they will in turn give you this fresh food. And that proves really difficult. The tribes are very wary, and when they do eventually connect up with them and they give them these gifts, they look at them in derision, really, and throw them away. So he can't get fresh vegetables or fish or anything else from them. And that is a crisis. It's a crisis of a castaway. And the crisis is resolved by sheer chance. One of his men is out there trying to find a channel, and he goes out onto one of the reefs offshore from Cooktown, from Endeavour River, and sees all these enormous 200-pound green turtles basking in the sun. And they grab them, 13 of these turtles. They put them on their boat and they celebrate, because it's obvious, Banks says, that we are now saved. They can keep turtles alive. They can take them with them on the voyage, you know. They're just wallowing in riches. That's how Banks said. What they didn't realize, of course, was that these turtles belonged to the indigenous people of the district as they saw it. It's part of their country. They know that they're there, I mean, they can go and get them any time. 13 turtles on one ship is absolutely exceptional. I mean, it's a huge quantity. We'll be keep the local clans for months in food.
It would have been very difficult for our people to get meat, you know, with using spears and the implements that they did use in hunting. And turtles, one of the food sources, a great gourmet delight for indigenous people.
Yes.
But interestingly, Ian, what I thought was very interesting, that it was not the traditional time for turtle hunting. You know, there was only 6 months of the year where turtles were hunted.
And so they actually come to the ship. They send what we would now reckon to be a kind of delegation. It's 10 naked men with spears. And they come up in a canoe and they come up to the ship and they make it very clear that they want at least one turtle. And they refuse. They manhandle these blokes away. They push them away. Cook offers them bread and they throw the bread on them. I mean, they don't want bread. They don't know what bread is. So eventually, angered, they jump into their boat, go across to the shore and set fire to the grass where the men have tents and things on the shore. So Cook orders one of his men to fire and they hit one of these men. The blood is quite clearly seen and the rest run away.
You know, we can understand that Cook needed to replenish his supplies, yes. But it was interesting that of all the turtles they had, the Bama only wanted one.
That's true.
They all only wanted one turtle.
That's true.